Hello and welcome to this episode of the ESG Fitness Podcast. We have quite an important question to start with. That just came from Claire, and it was, does anyone else get emotional watching tractors do their job? No? Somebody else, like,
No.
please write into the podcast or tag us in your stories. Like, Claire's just been out watching tractors getting emotional.
It's almost like, in films when horses come on and you get a bit emotional.
Is
Is
that
that how
Claire.
you feel when you see a tractor? Yeah.
Also, what do you mean in films when the horses come on and you get
Like when they're galloping and stuff, or like when someone's like galloping on a riding a horse and going really fast, or like in a war movie and the horses come on.
Yeah, but that's normally because it's like, I don't know, some woman running away from like a terrible husband on a horseback, and you're like, oh, so emotional. Not
Yeah.
like, oh, look at that tractor.
It's
Doing
okay,
a job.
maybe it's more like the combine harvesters when they're like so giant, they're almost like majestic, and like, and it's dark and their lights are all on.
To be fair, when it's dark, although I wouldn't say majestic, I'd say more a little bit scary.
Oh.
Anyway,
Now we know how to make Claire cry. Send her a picture of a tractor.
oh, Claire will cry at anything.
I've
Yeah, that's
noticed
true.
in the chat, it's made me cry. Yeah.
Yeah, just in case
Yeah.
anyone's like wondering, the amount of check-in responses that Claire's like, this just made me cry. I mean, at least you're having a good time. You're probably going to get more like invested in caring coach. So if you're Claire, you're better.
Bagger in your tractors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tractor porn. What?
Well, that's a thing, isn't it? Is
No,
it? Google.
don't
Google
want
it.
to. We need to check Claire's search history. Her and
Going to
her
be like,
Massey Ferguson's.
what? Okay.
Oh, my face hurts.
Oh God, this is bad news. Like, I just got an invite on Facebook to a broadcast channel, which means Facebook must be starting them as well.
Oh.
Just have endless invites to crap that you don't want.
Yeah. I've not gone to any. I don't even know what they are.
It's literally just like a chat that you can only speak one way.
Oh.
Well, like they'll broadcast to you. You can't reply. Is that
Don't like
right? I've never actually been in one either.
it. Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah. It's like an announcement WhatsApp group or like Telegram.
Yeah.
It's just like getting notices. You can react to the message, but you can't reply.
Great.
I don't like it.
No.
I
Okay, we have does anyone have any news before we start?
Nothing really, no. don't think so.
Live quite
My
a
cat
sheltered life.
disappeared.
Your cat's here.
She disappeared. It's the
Oh, hello.
aggressive one, though, so I can't really pick her up and be like, woo.
Oh, it's aggressive.
She's just sassy. And when she doesn't want to be like grabbed, she'll tell me.
I don't
Yeah.
like cats.
Oh, can't be friends anymore.
Yeah.
No,
Do you want
not a
to just
cat
remove
person.
yourself from the Zoom recording?
Excuse me, since
I
when do you like cats?
don't dislike cats. I quite like cats.
No, I don't trust them. I'm a dog person.
Hmm.
I was a dog person, but then I changed when I got my cats because I don't know, maybe it's just I've grown up and I hate being like touched all the time. I don't know. And like, dogs, they're just like give me attention all the time. Whereas like cats, they'll lie on me for like a really nice period of time and then they'll just go outside for ages and I really enjoy that space.
They're independent.
Yeah.
I like that as well. They don't need
Still a
very much.
dog.
You just kind of put a bit of food down and then they just do their
Yeah.
own thing.
Yeah. But my fluffy one is kind of like a dog too, though. She like paws at me and stuff. And yeah.
So I was on a call the other day. I won't name her name because she just won't be named, but girl on AFM who I'm working with. And she was like, ha ha ha. Like two cats came, like walked past the camera. And she's like, ha ha ha. Yeah, we've got 10. And I was like, and then she was like, no.
What? 10 cats.
Oh, well, then we like adopted these other cats. And then someone else was like, we've got no home for these cats. So can we? And then we ended up with 10. And I was
I
like,
would do that if James wasn't here.
oh, I know you would, yeah. No.
Like, there's a cat that comes into our house that just eats our cat's food. And then I didn't even realize I was sitting on the sofa and I heard a cat eat, and I was like, oh, it'll be one of my cats. And then this ginger cat just walked past me, and I was like, wait a minute, where did you even come from?
Well, that's what I love about cats as well. Like, they'll just go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, should we answer a question? Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Okie dokie. This is actually this came in from one of my one-to-one check-ins. It says, I always feel guilty about eating after 8 p.m. and wondered if this was a diet culture thing, that I'm suddenly going to gain weight if I eat after a certain time.
Well, you won't suddenly gain weight if you eat after a certain time. But saying that, you do probably deal with food worse later on. Well, it's not even probably. Like research shows that you have a harder time metabolizing food later in the day. So would it make sense from a health perspective not to eat after 8 p.m.? Yeah, like it genuinely would. There's good research for that. But it doesn't mean that if you do eat after 8 p.m., anything bad it's going to happen, especially not as a one-off. I would say the benefits of not eating after 8 p.m. are the one, the metabolic health side, and then two, you're probably going to sleep better, like not eating within kind of like 4 hours before bed. Now there's caveat to this that like it's all very individual, and if you're someone who works shifts or you can't get home until later, or so, you know, like take it all with a pinch of salt. But I would say, yeah, there is good evidence that eating earlier in the day and stopping eating earlier would be a good thing. And I did a whole episode on this. The fasting episode is probably like 4 episodes ago, that kind of delves into exactly why that is.
I think the main thing is like what you kind of mentioned there with if your schedule kind of messes up and you have to eat past that time to not think that it's a bad thing. I think that's probably, I remember when I was little, I don't know how little, that makes me sound like a kid, more like a teenager. I remember, I can't remember if it was my mom or my sister, but it was those things from back, you know, like the myths from back then, like don't eat past this time because you'll just gain weight. So I think knowing that there are potentially some benefits is a good thing, but don't stress if you do, because if you're hungry, you know, have and you need something, have something. I guess it's,
You could
yeah.
argue the other way as well, in that like if you're trying to build muscle, there might be benefit to having a bit of protein before bed, before you've got this like 8 hour fast where you're, you know, going to be in primarily a catabolic state. Then having a bit of protein before bed might be beneficial, and there's research behind that as well. So you kind of got to think, who's the individual, what are they struggling with, what's the outcome? And then also, even with the 8 p.m. like Claire's saying, make it work for yourself. If you're someone who's quite active later on during the day, then looking at, and this is where you need to apply like the research around like time restricted eating to who's actually in that study and when are they most active. And that's something that's quite hard to control in a study, right? So by that I mean, if you're someone who, I don't know, doesn't get up until 10 and then actually doesn't go to bed until midnight because you're more of a, what do they call them, lark, an evening lark, is that right? No,
I've
but
not heard.
you're a night owl, you're a morning lark, is that right? Anyway, whatever,
It's a night owl.
your circadian rhythm, like naturally, and this does happen for some people, is naturally pushed towards the end of the day. Then actually 8 p.m. might be a good time for your dinner. And if you just think, right, well, how am I going to apply that to myself? I don't know what my, you know, genetic circadian rhythm is. And you're right, nobody does, technically, unless you've actually been tested for it. Try and think about when you're most active. That's when you should eat most of your calories. So if you're someone who is mostly active during the day and then you're not very active in the afternoon or in the evening, eat more when you're active. That's when your body will metabolize it best.
Yeah, I think for this particular person, what she was concerned about was the messaging of if you eat after 8 p.m., you're going to gain fat. But now that she's kind of got her head around the fact that you can't gain fat if you're not consuming extra calories. So if you are trying to lose weight, and as long as you're staying within your deficit calories, it doesn't matter technically what time you eat at, you're not going to gain weight. So this idea that eating after 8 o'clock is just going to magically make you gain fat is not true.
I think it's too short term. Like the narrative behind it kind of makes sense, and I think that's why this myth has kind of stuck, is that it's like, okay, well, if you eat something and then you just go to bed, the whole like thing behind that was then you won't burn it off and it'll just be stored as fat. Whereas if you eat something in the morning, then you're going to burn it off during the day. And it's like, yeah, technically, but you're looking at a longer period of time, right? Like no one really loses or gains that much fat in a day at all, right? It's tiny amounts. But over a week, if you're in a significant deficit, then hey, you can lose fat. So I'd more think of it in a broader sense.
Agree. Okay, next question. How do you deal with stress and how do you switch off? For context, uses alcohol normally? That's a good question. How do I switch off? I don't really, I'm not gonna lie. Not very good at it.
Right.
Yeah. I like to I like to try a load of different things. Sometimes I like to go out and be active. Other times I like to just sit down on the couch and watch something that like I really enjoy and can actually feel like I can relax. If I'm stressed, I usually do like to just I'd often just go for a walk and see where I end up kind of thing and just like go exploring somewhere. So yeah, being active for me is generally good. Yeah, they're kind of my go-to is either I'm either really active or else I'm kind of like, I just need to wrap up and be cozy in a blanket watching television.
What do you do?
I used to think that it was quite cool to be a bath girl, but I get quite bored in the bath. And I tried it, and I think I just pretended for a while that I was this person. So that didn't work. But I think it can be quite good just to have a bath and just try and switch off. But I ended up just going on my phone or something. But I
Yeah, I
think
think
you need to
that's the
really.
thing is if you are going to have a bath, don't take your phone.
Yeah. Reading in the bath actually was a little thing that I didn't mind doing for a while, and I'd put my phone somewhere else. But yeah, reading is probably something that I'm enjoying right now because like I get distracted quite easily. So if the book's boring, I'll have to read and read and read like over the same paragraph. But if I find something like right now, I'm reading like fantasy stuff. I know that sounds really weird, but
Tractors,
what?
fantasy tractors.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, nice.
But I actually am really enjoying that, and I get like zoned out when I finish. I actually feel quite good. And then the other thing that's really I love is my yoga, which I've liked for a while. And again, that's moving, but because you're focusing on the breathing and like the movement, I really zone into it. So that helps me as well. So that's probably the main things.
I think when you think about different people's strategies, that usually it does come to something where you're not connected or on your phone. So whether that's like getting outside or whether that's having a bath but not having your phone or whether that's reading, like reading is quite a good one because if you can actually read books, which I really struggle with, then you can't do anything else. You can't be on your phone while you're reading. You know, it's taking up your full attention. I also find like audiobooks work so well because it kind of takes you away to something else or to like a bigger view of things, depending on what you're listening to. Either it's like if it's fiction, you're kind of like taken away to a different world. And if it's not, but it's like quite inspiring, it often makes me realize like I'm stressed about something that won't even matter in a week. And I think the other side of it is the kind of like mindset side of, okay, writing down what can you control, what can't you control? And then thinking, in a week, in 2 weeks, in a couple of months, like, am I giving this more brain energy than it needs? Like, will it matter then? You know, it's going to get done. Is it going to matter in a few weeks? And then try and just kind of like reduce the amount of stress you're putting on that. And then my favorite reframe for stress is just like, it means that you care about something. Like, whatever you're stressed about is something that you inherently care about. And if you took all of your stresses away, your life would be crap. Like, you're only stressed about stuff because something's happening that you care about. So I would try not to see it as always such a negative thing. And then when it comes to work stuff, for me, what really helps is I'm like, can I just make this fun? Like, if you take, sometimes you put so much stress on yourself and then you're like, just take a little bit of a step back and just be like, is this really going to matter? Can I just have a bit of fun with it? I started this because I wanted it to be fun. And then you put all this pressure on yourself and then you kind of like ruin the enjoyment of something that you once really enjoyed.
There was a TED Talk. I can't remember if.
Alia Crumb.
Is that the one where it reframes stress? And it was like looking at. Was it death? Was it. Did it look at death rates or something? And how you viewed. I can't remember. What was it? Heart attacks or something?
There's quite a few studies kind of about that. Her work's amazing because she looks at so many different areas and it's kind of about like your perception of things and how you view them, how it impacts you on like a physiological level. I think this one about stress was more that there was like one kind of infotainment video that was about like how stress can be the number one killer and stress is so negative and blah, blah, blah. And then there was another one that was like, you perform at your best when you're most stressed. You don't run PBs in training. You run them at the Olympic Games. Like, stress can make you up your game and all this stuff. So, and then depending on that, the people in the audience like perceive stress in a very different way. And there was some kind of physiological outcome to that as well. But anyway, I think go watch it. If you just Google Alia Crumb and stress, it'll come up. He's very good. All right.
Okay. Tips on managing overeating and low mood the week before your period. Can't relate.
Okay, definitely from a practical standpoint, have the, by the way, I think part of this, and I actually realized this because this was literally me the last couple of days. When you have PMS, if you're anything like me, you just enjoy overeating. It honestly doesn't really matter that much what it is, or it doesn't, it hasn't to me. So like I've definitely overeaten the last few days, but a lot of it's been fruit, and it's like more than what I would probably eat, and it's probably like over my maintenance calories, not really a problem because I'm not trying to lose fat at the moment. But sometimes you just want to eat something and feel really full, as opposed to it having to be chocolate or having to be something very calorie dense. So you might want to consider that. And the practical standpoint of that as well is like, curate your environment for this. Don't surround yourself with chocolate the week before your period and then think that somehow you're going to manage not to eat it all. Like, if you want to have some, cool, have it, but go out of the house and have it. And then have in the house the easiest stuff to grab should be the stuff that you do want to go for, like high protein and lots of fruit and veg and nice tasty stuff. Like, I'm about to roast some parsnips. Well, nice.
I like it when they get burnt slightly and they're almost caramelized.
Have you ever cooked them in the air fryer?
No.
No. Oh, they're nice.
Don't have
No.
one.
I did have one, but I think I used it like 4 times. Again, that was something that I just, bought and didn't use.
I've never once used my oven here. It's just air fryer.
Really?
Yeah, but you've got
Not
like a
bad.
proper ninja, don't you?
Yeah, the dual drawer one.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, I bought a cheap one because I thought, I'm going to see if I actually use this. And if I do, then I'll buy like a better one. And I never used it, but now I think I maybe didn't use it because it's cheap and crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. The period thing, I think you've kind of nailed it. Like, I just make sure that if I want chocolate, I don't feel bad about, because I know like I've had a few messages like in the, well, feedback in check-ins about how to handle periods, and most of them like I really want to eat chocolate. I'm like, well, if you want to eat it, like you can eat it. It's just about thinking about how much you're going to eat it and how you feel about yourself for eating it. There's nothing wrong with eating it at all. And just if you are wanting to be in a deficit, it's just making sure you allow that it's planned and it's there in the day, like instead of like you've finished your whole day and then you grab some chocolate and then you feel bad about it, which you shouldn't feel bad about it. But yeah, I think planning it in definitely makes it easier, and yeah.
And you'll enjoy it more as well if you're like, oh, do you know what? I'm really looking forward to this bag of Maltesers. And then have it like after your lunch or after your dinner. Don't have it when you're really hungry.
Yeah.
Have something filling and then like sit down with a cup of tea and really enjoy it.
I think it's worth knowing yourself and knowing how you respond. Like I do feel insatiable when I'm on my period. So I have to be really intentional about eating like high volume food that's literally going to make me feel like my stomach is expanded.
Stomach is expand.
Yeah. So I tend to be like that. But if I was having chocolate, I think I do pairing it with something like that's going to be a bit more filling, like pairing it with like Greek yogurt or
Pair
fruit or a pear, yeah. But
it with a pear.
making a bit more of a meal out of it, because like a small bit of chocolate doesn't really go very far.
No.
I agree with that. Like I prefer making, like one of my favorite things is just like a yogurt, like you said, but then with like a scoop of peanut butter. A scoop actually sounds huge, like your normal portion of peanut butter. And then like even just like berries or something, and like that is one of my favorite things to eat, and that really if fills like the hole for me thinking, oh, I want all of this chocolate or something. So yeah, that's a good point.
I love the puddings from Lidl, the caramel one, and then with like a load of chopped up strawberries and then a sprinkle of like really crunchy cereal.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
So you're getting a
Make
few
yourself
different
something like
textures.
that. And I think it's the process of making it as well. And it's something you're enjoying,
Yeah.
not just like grabbing a bar of chocolate and.
It's more mindful,
Yeah.
right? When you have to make it and think about it and.
And like a big bowl of something will take a lot longer to eat than like a little Freddo bar. Like,
Yeah.
snaffle that up in like seconds.
Yeah, all
Snaffle
good.
that up. Snaffle it up, yeah.
That an Irish thing?
I don't know. Obviously, if you've never heard of it.
One thing on this, I put this in the group yesterday, partly because on the last podcast, I think we were asked this question, and I think I almost didn't answer it, or I thought I could give more context to it. So anyway, I put in the group, when you're bored, emotional, or tired in the evening and you crave eating something, what are your top distraction methods? How do you find comfort without turning to food? And there's really good examples here. But then one I really just wanted to emphasize from Roanne, and she was like, controversial, having tried most distraction methods, none of them provide the comfort that I get from food cravings. Cups of teas, baths, etc. are lovely, but don't cut it. Personally, just for me, I've just sucked it up. And in the moment, I remind myself that comfort from snacks won't contribute to my long-term goal. Also, learning to sit with my emotions, it's bloody hard. And I know I have a quote unquote hard stop after, and I now have a quote unquote hard stop after dinner rule. And honestly, I think there's always an element of that. Like, we're always like, oh, how can I get the exact same comfort I would get from eating 5 bars of chocolate without doing it? It's like, you're not, you won't. Like, how can I completely satiate all of my cravings the week before my period? You can't. Like you, even if you did eat loads of chocolate, you'd still crave, like you probably would still crave it. Some of these things aren't meant to be satiated. And actually, the ability to just be like, this is a feeling that I don't need to act on. Not all feelings need to be acted on. And actually, like your control and your ability to choose what you do act on and what you don't act on is like really what's going to dictate your results in life, like generally. And even in like other situations as well, like, sometimes I think we're so we have this almost like victim mentality towards food and how we feel about food. When if you're like, oh, do you know what? I just really want to buy everything, all of these clothes. It's like, well, okay, but you can't because you don't have enough money to do that. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay, fine. But you wouldn't be like, oh, that's so unfair on me. You'd just be like, yeah, fair. I can't buy the whole of the Lululemon shop. I'm just going to have to pick one or two things. It's kind of the same thing. It's like budget, choose what you want to have. And sometimes that'll be harder to do than others. And I do the same. Like my approach around PMS is like, I will be craving this week. So I try and make it as easy as possible to stick to my targets. But is it harder that week? Yeah. Like, yeah, it is. It's well harder. But that's life.
Bam, tough love. Okay, you ready for another question?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'd like to start journaling, but I'm not sure where to start. Is there any structure that you follow when you journal daily that you could share? I'd like to be able to journal every day, but I need to be able to keep it short and succinct, and I have a tendency to write an essay, which I don't have time for every day.
I literally made a journal for this.
Yeah, and this person is actually one of my one-to-ones, and after she posted this, I got her check-in, so I've actually sent her
Oh,
some
okay.
journal prompts. Yeah. But your journal is on Amazon. You have
It
two, haven't you?
I have two. They're very similar. The Commit to Six one more follows along the Commit to Six program, but the VJ can be used by anyone.
Right, next question. What's a long one? How many trip ups in my words will I do in this one? Who's going to count? Okay. Here's something I've had a realization on today. I completely get the puck yeah principle, making sensible choices, balancing out decisions to allow meals out. I definitely understand and really think it's a much healthier way of approaching fat loss and a healthier lifestyle. However, I often feel completely dissociated and detached between goals and actions. If I can manage it, what? There we go. I can manage it if I really, really stop and think I'm slow. But in the heat of the moment or in a rush, everything feels like a whirl. I grab the mini eggs or a weird flavored hot cross buns. Then I feel guilty later on for being completely detached from myself. I want to crack this. I'm 40. I know that my health matters even more, but something in my brain isn't connecting. That question made me sweat.
Sorry, I was just giggling when the war in Ukraine started.
Oh, so you didn't hear any of that, did you?
Read it
Sorry.
again, please.
Oh, no, I'm not. No way.
I was listening.
All right. This
Multitasking.
reminds me of reading in school when I used to be like, no, miss, please. I don't want to do it.
God, that was awful.
I used to hate it, yeah.
I hated it
So
too,
bad. And
especially
like,
when you're dyslexic.
oh.
Very bad times.
Yeah. I'd happily get up and sing in front of a class of people before reading out something.
Oh my
I'd
God, that was
dance.
worse. I remember we used to have a choir practice, like even people that weren't in a, like as part of music at school. Awful. But do you know what they did, which I thought was quite clever, is they would, and it's the only kind of thing in school that people did. And I guess it's a good way to get people to join something, but they would send letters home, like to your parents, being like, Emma's really excelled in singing. Here's an invite for her to join the choir, right? So then you'd think, oh my God, I've been selected. Little did I know, literally everyone was selected, right? But you feel like, oh, who's me, been selected for the choir.
Do you know, I used to think I was really good at singing. And then there's two moments that made me realize I wasn't. One of them was, I don't know what it was. It was to get selected for primary school choir, and we had to sing Happy Birthday. And I remember singing it and being like, I think that was okay. And then just never heard back. So that was when I was really young, though. So I got a little bit of a complex. But then the next time, I remember singing in my bedroom, and then my dad came in and was like,
Please
just
stop.
basically, Claire, you can't sing, shut up. I was like, simple. Like, because I think it was like something like Whitney Houston, and no one can sing Whitney Houston apart from Whitney Houston. But I definitely think I would have been one of those people who goes on to Britain's Got Talent if
Oh,
that didn't
God.
happen to me. that I
Well, you've
thought
got
was
more to thank
great.
your dad for then, to, you know, saved you that. Oh, no, I've always known I've not been good at singing. But do you know what I did do, which we all still very impressed at, is the year after I moved up from Oxford, I won the Burns poem competition.
Oh,
Yeah. And I'm still wondering
which
if
poem?
it was more like a, oh, that's so nice that the little English girl tried to do it, or whether I was actually really good. Because at the time, I think I was really good. But now looking back, I'm like, that was a total token thing.
Did you
My,
write your own poem?
no. You had to say it's a
Which
Burns,
one was it?
the
Oh.
one that's like, wee and timorous beastie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The mouse one.
I don't know. Yeah, anyway, my parents don't like frame anything that we do. Like, no one went to any graduations. No one's fussed about that. Do you know what's framed on the wall? The Burns certificate. So funny. Okay, what was the question? It was about puck yes or no. But thinking about that in the moment.
Yeah, she tends to dissociate and detach from her goals and actions. It's like her brain can't connect and she totally dissociates from what she wants and carries out like behaviors that aren't in line with her goals.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all relate to this and being quite impulsive. You're not going to like the answer to this, but it's to slow down. It's actually one of the reasons that tracking calories works so well, is it forces you to do this because you can't impulsively look up something on MyFitnessPal and then add it and then eat the thing afterwards, right? So it's forcing you to make a pause between, oh, I really want to eat that, and it already being in your mouth before you even think about it. That's what I would say. That's actually one of the key benefits to tracking, is the awareness and the mindfulness around what you're putting in your body and like the caloric density of it. But it's a skill. Like, it's a skill that I think everyone has to work on. It's the same skill as, like, I don't know, your partner being really annoying and you not just telling them to piss off, you know, or like reacting to something or shouting at someone. Like, that kind of level of like impulsive aggression, like, as an adult, you're like, you need to learn how to control that, right? It's the same with food. And it's not always easy. And there'll definitely be certain times, like, for example, the week before your period, where that does tend to be harder to control those impulses. But it's still like, it is still the practice of, okay, I'm gonna sometimes creating rules around it, whether that is tracking calories or whether it is like, I always say what I'm gonna eat in my head before I eat it, or I always just ask myself one question, is this in line with my goals before I eat something? And sometimes it might be, no, but I really want to have it. Okay, but you've still thought about it and you're making a conscious decision rather than just feeling like it's kind of happening to you. And then you're halfway through eating something and you're like, oh, I didn't even really think about this. Or things like, I'm only going to eat sitting down at a meal table as opposed to eating on the go, because that often happens if you're eating on the go. Yeah, or figure out when it's most likely to happen to you. I tend to overeat if I eat with my laptop open, because I'm just kind of like half distracted. And then I suddenly start eating really quickly as well. It's very strange, but I'm normally quite a slow eater.
She has said here that she can manage it if she really, really slow down, but it's in the heat of the moment. So I suppose figuring out like what you can actually do in that second to pause and think about what you're going to do. Saying the word stop out loud can be really effective to just kind of break the link of what you're kind of going to do. Another technique, but you might not want to do this, but I've done it before. Is like to have an elastic band on your wrist. So I did it a few years ago when like I was very self-critical. So I was told, put this band on your wrist, and every time you hear yourself saying something negative to yourself, you have to slap yourself in the wrist with this elastic band. And you only have to do it a couple of times before you realize that's fucking painful. So then you actually it breaks the habit quicker because you remember that, oh, every time I do this, I have to slap myself in the wrist. with this elastic band. So then you actually tune into what you're doing so that you don't have to slap yourself in the wrist. So I found that very effective, but like that was my personal experience. I'm not going to tell everybody to go around smacking themselves in the wrist. But something like that, it's just about bringing your awareness back to what you're doing in that moment.
Have you ever seen Amelia do that to me?
No.
Sometimes she says that I look at her forehead, right? And she hates it. She absolutely hates it. So whenever I do, she'll just smack me in the head, but we'll be in the middle of a conversation with someone and she'll just smack me in the head. I'm pretty sure she did it in front of Zoe once and she was like, "What the hell just happened?" I was like, "Oh yeah, sorry, sometimes." She was like, "Why does your friend just hit you in the face?" I was like, "Oh yeah, no, that's fine. It's just she's just training me out of looking at her forehead."
Why are you looking at her forehead? Are you
Don't
one of those
know.
people that doesn't look into the person's eyes? You're kind of looking up at their head. That is annoying.
No, I don't think I always. I mean,
Is it just to her forehead, or is it to everyone's forehead?
don't know. Because then they were like, then Zoe was like, "Yeah, she does that sometimes." I was like, "Oh, both of you." You know what? I think part of it is I find too much eye contact is a bit much.
No, I get you there.
Although I would say that with those two people in particular, that wouldn't bother me.
But you know, like when I can't remember when I had this conversation, like you meant to, we see when you're listening to someone, like you guys right now, you should be looking at me because I'm talking. Whereas, like, okay, that's fine. But when this, that's because the speaker usually like looks off in different ways, uses their hands. But if the speaker's like staring, I'm like, can I look away or is that rude? I don't like
But
it
it is.
either.
Do you know what though? It must be so hard for someone who, like, I don't know, if you don't really have those kind of like social cues. Because actually, the amount of eye contact you give, I think, is really important. Because if you don't give enough, you're not trusted. Like, people don't trust you. And if you give too much, then you're just so intense, and it's like, whoa, like, back off. You don't need to stare at me the whole time.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Yeah.
I feel like doctors sometimes do that. They either stare at their book the whole time or stare in your face the whole time, and you're like,
Especially if it's like quite like a personal conversation, you're like, I don't want to look into your eyes right now, you know?
Do you know what my GP does? And I'm not the only one who has said it. She sits on one of these like chairs with the wheels on it, yeah? Say I'm just sitting here. She'll come right in beside you. Her legs will be spread either side of your leg. And she's like staring at you. It's like, okay, I'm bad enough as it is with personal space. But to have you right in up on top of me, yeah.
And then
It's like,
asking you probably really like personal questions.
yeah, it's just a bit much now. And I did say it. I like I've said it to a few people. I'm like, does she like sit up on top of you? Yes, they said, yeah, legs spread. I was like, yeah.
Oh, God.
Let's hope she's not listening to this podcast.
Well, at least then she'll know, because I think that's the other thing, though. Like, someone's probably never told her. At least Amelia's like hitting me on the head. I know about it. I know it's a problem. I'm working on it, you know? But you wouldn't want, I think I'd want to know, especially if I was a doctor and like your part of your job is to make people feel comfortable and you're
Spreading your legs.
like, well, you're spreading your legs, but she's probably doing it to make people feel comfortable, but she's just
Yeah.
a bit too far, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the question?
About creating a pause in the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, how did we get over your slap in your forehead?
So you could do that, yeah. You could smack yourself in the face and be like, you don't need food now.
People might think you're a bit mad if you're just like shouting stop or like hitting yourself in the face. But the other thing that I find, I can't remember where I heard this. But you could get a piece of jewelry that reminds you, whether it's like, I don't know, like a ring or something. Some people just feel like, okay, if I just like hold that ring or I touch that ring or something, it's like the reminder of like, okay, let me think about this. I want to be pre I think it was more with like being present, which I guess is similar. It's the same thing. It's like if you know, if you're mindlessly eating, it's because you're not truly being present. It's bringing yourself back into the moment. And then the other thing that you'll probably find, because as you were reading that question about when I'm in a rush, I tend to make poorer choices. That's completely true, right? And I always find this, especially for me, it's normally like I've rushed home. I know I've got a call in 10 minutes and I'm gonna like have some food beforehand, but I'm so rushed. I don't enjoy eating the food. I make poorer choices and like I can't even really, you're kind of grabbing something out the fridge while you've also got something on the plate and you're like, I don't even know how much I've had. That situation. So it's okay, how do I avoid that? Once you know when the situation is most likely to happen, how do I avoid that? Could I have just had an apple and then waited until after that call and actually sat down and enjoyed something? Yeah, probably a way better idea. Or could I have, instead of being like, oh, well, that just happens, it's like, well, no, it happened because I was poorly prepared. So how do I make sure it happens less? It's not going to say it's never going to happen again, but how do I make sure that tomorrow isn't exactly the same thing?
This is the non-aggressive one.
Hello.
Oh my gosh.
Hi. All right, next question.
When you lose weight, does your calorie range then need to be readjusted lower? At what point would this need to happen? E.g., would it make any difference for a few pounds lost?
Did you do a post on this, Emma?
Probably always talking about calories, aren't I? Yes, it will to an extent. Will it matter if it's a few pounds? No. And it's way less exact than what people think, right? So if you're like, oh, I've lost 5 pounds, your basal metabolic rate might have lowered slightly, but you're probably talking about like in the range of like 20 to 30 calories, which is well within the range of like inaccurate calorie readings, right? So we wouldn't change anything. The way that we work once we've got a range that's working is that we will change that with you if it needs to be changed. Complete transparency. We have people lose 10, 20, up to like 30 pounds without ever changing their calories. Like I've had a woman who's lost over 50 pounds. She started on 1800 calories. She's still eating 1800 calories. It's still a deficit for her. Was it a bigger deficit for her when she weighed 50 pounds more? Yeah, but it's still a deficit for her now and she's still losing weight on those. Like you don't need to change it. Unless we want to, unless your coach does it with you, basically. But you certainly don't need to be like, oh, I've lost X amount of weight, I'll change my calories. Once you've got real life data on you, never ever go back to a calorie calculator or like a measure. It's like once you know what's working or you've got a consistency, then we move from that consistency, right? This is why I'm always like, you don't really need to track calories if you're consistent. You know that you're consistently eating in a certain way and you're not getting the result that you want, and the result that you want is fat loss, then you need to eat less. Okay, let's look at your normal diet and see what changes can we make to make sure that you're eating less than what you're eating now. It doesn't need to be exact. Like, it doesn't need to be exactly X amount of calories. And even when people think it is, it's not. It's just not that accurate.
Yeah, I always say if it's not broke, don't fix it. Like if what you're doing is working, then keep doing that. A lot of time what happens is it's not actually that the deficit or the range needs to change. It's actually that your adherence has maybe slipped. So I would always look at that first before making any changes and potentially looking at your activity before ever changing your food.
Agreed, that's almost always what's happened is that actually you kind of slip. Like at the start, it's all new and you're weighing stuff out and you know exactly what you have in, and then portion sizes creep up or this pops in here and there, and you just become a little bit less lenient and you think that you're still sticking to 1600 calories, but really it's closer to 1800 now. So normally what we do is like have a bit of an audit week, tighten things up a little bit, and then get you going again.
That's when tracking can be quite good as well, because you've almost got a history of what you've done. Like, obviously, you don't need to track, but I was speaking to someone recently who was talking about their calories, and then they looked back at like the past month or something, and they're like, actually, I've only done my step. They track their steps as well. I've only done my steps and my calories like a total of like 3 days or something out of the whole month, when they thought they were doing a lot better. So, yeah, you don't have to track, but tracking is actually quite good. to see, like, actually, in the past 2 weeks, I've only done 3 days of my targets and stuff. So, yeah, I think that's definitely important.
Yeah, it shows you previous consistency, which is the most important thing. And I think a lot of people who aren't getting results because they're not being consistent on their current calories. And then they think, well, if I'm not getting results at 1600, I'm going to drop to 1400. But in reality, they weren't being consistent on 1600. So what the hell are the chances of being consistent on even lower calories, which are going to be harder to stick to? And I get
Yeah.
the temptation of it. And I get that, like, a lot of people almost become kind of like blinded to that. Like, oh, well, it's not working, so I need to drop calories. You don't. You need to be consistent on the ones that you've got because at the moment, you're not being. And if you drop them, what will happen is you'll just yo-yo back and forward between, I managed to stick to this for 3 days and then I massively overeat. And even then, sometimes, again, people are kind of blind to the overeating and they're like, well, 1400 isn't working. I'm going to drop to 1200. And this cycle just gets like more and more extreme. So
Yeah.
if you are stuck in that cycle, reach out because we want to get you out of it. All right, should we do the last question?
Vegan slash plant-based protein powders. Is there anything particular to look for in a plant-based proteins, or can you recommend some decent brands?
I quite like Awesome Supplements for vegan protein. And I would look at the leucine content. A lot of vegan sources of protein have low leucine content. But some don't anymore, which is great.
I heard the My Protein one was meant to be good, but I've never got it, so I don't actually know, but
Yeah, I think if you're not vegan, it's very unlikely you're going to have tried vegan protein. I mean, I have a few times, but whey protein is superior, so why would you have vegan if you're not vegan? But if you do want it, then I do rate Awesome Supplements. Well, should we do one more?
yeah. How to balance not eating everything on my plate and also wanting to eat all as I'm on limited calories? Does that make sense?
What?
How to balance not eating everything on my plate and also wanting to eat it all as I'm on limited calories? I would say don't fill your plate. Don't overfill your plate. You can always go back for more if you need some more, maybe to reduce portion sizes or use a smaller plate. That can be psychologically good to think that you still have a full plate. Sometimes you can feel like if you have a really large plate and you can see that there's a lot of space on the plate, if you're having a smaller portion, it can feel like you're not having that much food. So having a smaller portion can be, having a smaller plate to match the portion size can be good.
Or
But
bulk it out, like don't
yeah.
exercise is enough. Like food volume is so important. Exactly what Maureen said. Loads of research around this as well. Even if it's the same calories, if there's higher food volume, you will feel fuller, you'll feel less restricted, you'll find it so much easier to stick to your calories. And so many people are just thinking about calories and don't think about food choices. And it is so hard to stick to your calories if you don't think about food choice, especially if you're like if you're on anywhere around like 1600 calories, you need to be considering food volume.
It's so common, I think, when someone thinks that they want to go on a deficit, that when their calories reduce, their portions should be reducing. When, do you know, I don't know if that's just they need to be more aware of like how little calories are in like, say, broccoli and like green veg. And I don't know if that's just something that they don't know. I'm not sure, but I feel like even when they people like I've seen it when I've worked in like offices or something like that sounds like I've been an office worker. I obviously was not when I worked for Origin and stuff and say like you see people with like a tiny little I'm like you could bulk that out so much. And I think that's maybe just again we're tracking and learning the value of food really comes into it so that you know you can have a giant plate.
I think a lot of people underestimate or don't realize how much veg they can actually eat when trying
Yeah.
to be in a deficit. A lot of people say, well, I'm eating loads of veg. And then you look at it and it's like you could be eating a lot more
Yeah. Can
there.
I just say, when a restaurant's like, oh, You've got a side salad with that, and it's like two pieces of cucumber, like a one cherry tomato, and like a leaf of lettuce. That is not an adequate salad, right? When we're talking about salad, we mean like big salad bowl. So like you can go one way or the other. Like if you're having something that you know is going to be quite high calories, do what Maureen said, have a smaller plate because you don't want a big empty plate. Or if you're not, like bulk it out. Or even if you are, if you're okay, it's Friday night, I'm gonna have an Indian takeaway with my partner. Okay, they have whatever they want, but you're gonna have it on a big plate of salad as well, or like, you know, some roast veg or like something that you can eat a lot of for very little calories. The amount of like comments I used to get as well, people being like, how do you eat so much and stay lean? It's like, because the calories in this are not very much, you know, like that. This is the same as your tiny meal deal sandwich, but I get to eat so much more of it, so much more satiating, so much more enjoyable, but it's the same calories.
Like one of my favorite meals is a steak, but on the side of the steak, I literally like see like tender stem broccoli or like a pack of asparagus. I probably use all of what is in that one pack and just have that with the, and I usually eat my veg first. So then I feel almost like a bit fuller before I eat my favorite part. And then I finish and I'm so full, and it's because I've just had like a whole pack like broccoli, and but I love broccoli and asparagus, so that's maybe something. We don't really like veg,
Yeah, and
so
also,
maybe
if you're not absolutely rolling in it, eating a whole pack of asparagus every day, you can also like things like stir fry or like frozen veg, you can bulk it out and then like a little bit of tender stem or a little treat on the side.
When I was the last time I was in like a structured fat loss phase, and I was probably the leanest I've ever been, I was eating like 500 grams to a kilo of veg every day.
See, I never think of it like that, so I don't really know how much that is.
Yeah. How much is a bag of tender stem?
I'm not sure actually. It was a lot of veg anyway.
Isn't like a whole bag of stir fry like 500 grams?
Yeah, I think so. Because I use the Tesco frozen stir fry bag, and I just tip it in, and it makes three meals, I think I make out of it.
Frozen stir fry.
No, it's like what's in it? It's called stir fry veg. There's like baby corn, peppers, onions, water chestnuts.
Oh,
What
but they're
else?
frozen. Why? No.
It's so handy for meal prep though. Like when I can't be arsed cooking, I just throw that bag, a protein source and like a bolognese sauce, let it cook away.
I'm
Happy
sorry. Bolognese with a stir fry.
It's not actual
No.
stir fry veg. It has like carrots and sugar snaps and a mixture of veg.
Don't try and wind it back in now. That's weird.
It's
And
not weird. It's actually very nice. Thanks very much.
I
You
eat
thought my
them.
peanut butter and banana and egg was weird. You know,
That
that
is
is.
weird. That is weird. Peanut butter and egg, just.
Oh no, I did that. I had one time I didn't have like anything in the house. I just could not be bothered. And I had peas, eggs, and a bit of peanut butter. And
Yeah, well,
it was
you're no
perfect.
fucking Gordon Ramsay either, so don't be giving out to me about my food.
All right, anyway, let's wrap it up because I think we're done here. If anyone has enjoyed this episode, please do tag us and share. We'd love to hear from you. If anyone has a tractor fetish, please do tag Claire at Claire underscore ESG Fitness. She would love to connect over that. And if you're interested in having a coach who cries at tractors, head over to esgfitness.co.uk, fill in the application form, and I will introduce you to Claire. And
Thanks.
so, Maureen,
Sorry, what?
any passing thoughts?
I just want to say a shout out to Alma, who replied to that comment very well about the portions. Well done, Alma. She'd be listening to this. She'd be like, oh, that's me.
Well done. What did she say?
She said, smaller plate to start with. Don't wolf everything down. Pause and think, have I enough? I find if you talk and eat at the same time, you'll be inclined to eat more. Skill if you can talk and eat at the same time.
Very rude.
Yeah. But apart from that, if you want to join our next round of Commit to Six, you can join the waiting list, which is at, what is it at? ESGfitness.co.uk/commit.
Yes, it is. Okay, thanks everyone. Bye.